Talk given Saturday, 22nd April 1972. You may recollect last time we considered the last words of the Buddha. Appamadena sampadeta. Keep going with diligence, without slacking. Now it is very important for us to appreciate the real context which is involved in that injunction of the Buddha. The Buddha was concerned with the mind, the healing of the mind, the psyche. Nature has brought the body to a fine pitch of perfection. But the mind, the psyche, is our particular task. This is where things are right or things go wrong. And when we say mind, we must remember that the perfected holy ones well understood the difference between just ordinary states of mind and the mode of awareness of existence which each one experiences from moment to moment. This mode of awareness of existence, which is the innermost depth, the essence of the mind, is something which we never know consciously. It remains hidden from us. It is the representative in our living being of mind in its transcendence. But according to our particular mode of awareness at the moment, our states of mind, our words and our actions follow accordingly. Now, if we cannot know what the inner state of consciousness itself is, how do we deal with it? We don't deal with it directly. We cannot deal with it directly. What we are conscious of are our states of mind, our emotions, our passing thoughts, our reactions, and so forth. This is what we are conscious of. And when this aspect of us is sufficiently quiet, and when we ourselves have developed the faculty of understanding our inner nature, we also know things which lie in the subconscious depths, which are also various states of mind. These we can know. And in observing these and understanding them fully, by pure perception and not in accordance with fixed ideas of any sort, the purification process which goes on in our states of mind reacts back upon the mode of awareness of existence. It changes it from the worldly mode of awareness into the transcendent mode of awareness, the holy, the whole mode of awareness. I believe this is something which is not made sufficiently explicit in the various scriptures of the world. There is this extraordinary difference between the two. The state of consciousness, the innermost depth of consciousness, is the fundamental determining power which throws up the various passing shapes of states of mind, thoughts, feelings, emotions, our speech and our behavior and everything else. And it is only by attending to these shapes and understanding them clearly that we can enable the state of consciousness to undergo that transformation, which puts us into rhythm and into perfect harmony with the transcendent real. Now the perfected holy ones knew this, and it is this with which they were concerned. When Jesus said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these other things will be added unto you," he did not mean things in our worldly sense at all. If we seek the kingdom of heaven and realize that kingdom of heaven, which is our own transcendent state of being, then all that is manifested in terms of virtues, abilities, of all that kind of behavior which preeminently marks the purified, perfected human being, all those will be added unto us. Now this, I believe, is the way we should try to approach the whole question of purification and of purity of the mind. So keep going without slacking. Keep going at the task of this knowledge of the self, the ways of the self. That is to say, the ways of the self which regards itself as separate from what it calls the not-self. And when we understand this really, fully, this false separation between self and not-self vanishes. And when that false separation vanishes, I have ceased to be a subhuman and I am truly human for the first time. It is this with which the holy ones were concerned. Now it is very interesting to note that all the scriptures of the world have insisted upon what they call righteousness, for instance, in Judaism, purity, as it is called in Zarathustrianism, and in all the other religions, you find the same teaching, that the supreme importance of purity, purity of mind, of speech, of action, and of our own bodily constitution. Absolute purity. One of the most beautiful and wonderful prayers of the Zarathustrians is a very short prayer called Ashem Vahu. It goes, Vaishtem Asti, Ushta Asti, Ushta Amai, Hiatashai, Vaishtai Ashem, which means, purity or righteousness or the supreme truth, it means all these things, Hashem, is the supreme righteousness. Righteousness is the supreme purity, or if you like to put it the other way around, purity is the supreme righteousness. It is happiness. Happiness is unto him who has realized supreme purity. Now you see, that gives us an extraordinary insight into the meaning of happiness. I have always said that the crown of our organic existence, our psychophysical existence, is happiness. Now you see the identification of happiness with purity. Now what does this purity mean essentially? Cleanliness, as we understand it in the ordinary way, is one aspect of it, obviously. But perhaps the deepest aspect of it is this, that whatsoever we think, feel, speak, and do should be free of all selfness, of all self-orientedness, and therefore of this limitation, this state of duality, which is the very root of conflict and misery in our life. If what I think is free of self, selfness that is, then that is a pure thought. If I experience an emotion which is free of selfness, that is a pure emotion. If I speak and do things which are not intended to cause division in the world, to cause division between self and not self, but are essentially harmony promoting, beauty releasing, then that speech and action is pure speech and pure action. You will see why the Buddha, at the end of his long life, 80 years, at the very end, those are his last two words, appamadena sampadita, keep going without flagging, without slacking, with diligence. Let us touch upon another significance of the fact that he says this at the very end of his life. We are alive. The living process is a continuous process. There is no stopping. If, for instance, in the body, the bloodstream stops flowing and takes a holiday, or the heart decides to take a short holiday, well, it will never return from that holiday. That's the end. But that precisely is the case with the psyche, the mind. Thoughts, feelings, the whole of our mental life is something which goes on perpetually. And since it goes on perpetually without a stop, whether the body is awake or whether the body is asleep, therefore attentiveness in one form or other is constantly operative. You might ask, well, how does one pay attention when one is asleep? The kind of attention that is paid when one is asleep depends upon the kind of attention we have paid throughout the day in our conscious waking state. Attentiveness goes on, although we may not have conscious knowledge of it. But attentiveness goes on. Everything registers, whether we are awake or whether we are asleep. Everything registers. And that registration takes place in the psyche. That is why everything that is registered is a force, an active living force, which works itself out. the more we are awake within ourselves and attend in the right way when we are conscious, that inevitable working out of the forces in the psyche will become more and more harmonious and release the right sort of influence, both in what we call, commonly call, our own lives and in the life of the world. Now we must bear in mind that we use the word psyche as a convenient word. Mind, as you know, like matter, is universal. The stuff of the body comes out of universal matter, and our psyches come out of universal mind, interacting with body. Now, just as the body is a particular representative, a particular material shape of universal matter, the psyche is our particular mind shape of universal mind. And it is because there is this extraordinary linkage, this extraordinary interaction, whose nature I don't know, it's such a mystery, between universal mind and body, because of that interaction, psyche is special to each person. That is his psyche, his particular mind shape, and therefore his personal responsibility arises there. Now the responsibility arises in us human beings because we human beings have the power to look within ourselves and to be self-aware in a manner that no animal can do. This places upon us this responsibility for the way in which we shall receive all the psychical influences which the whole world generates as they impinge upon us, and the further responsibility of how we will respond, how we will react is not the best word, respond is better, how we will respond to that which has impinged upon us. This is something of extraordinary importance, because if we really understand this, we will wake up to the fact that it is imperative for us to be constantly awake, alert, watchful inside ourselves, and to be truly attentive to what comes to us. It's our personal responsibility. Now you all know that the world psyche, particularly in our present age, is not exactly healthy. It is not exactly happy. It is in a state of real sorrow, dukkha, suffering. It is in a state of real ill. It has become literally far from the infinite. The world psyche and the psyche of individuals as such has almost lost its touch altogether with universal mind, which is the transcendent source of its strength and power and purity and beauty and everything. That is the state of the world psyche. Therefore, it becomes increasingly difficult for us as individuals to remain awake and alert to such an extent that whenever the influences of this sick psyche come upon us, violence, hate, greed, untruthfulness, dishonesty, inconsiderateness, everything that stands for evil, when that comes upon us, not to get caught up in that muddied swirl and send forth as a response another muddied swirl. Now you see, it is the mind which is the source of all external physical activity and our behavior in the physical world. It is the mind that is the source of this. And it is for this reason that the holy ones were concerned with the mind, with the soul. They were the saviors of souls, not merely so many bodies. They were saviors, they were purifiers of the mind. They were the awakeners of man to the transcendent real. And they knew that this was the supreme way, the only way, in which the life of individuals and the life of societies can become whole, simple, pure, and human. That is why they taught us this way. Now, as we saw a few minutes earlier, the mind is continuously alive. Therefore, keep going, don't stop. Keep going with diligence. All the time. This matter of purity is a very difficult matter altogether. Note, for instance, the ease with which, when we are, from the time we are little children, according to the company which we keep, we may either slide into evil ways, bad language, lasciviousness, mischief of the wrong sort, not the healthy mischief of the happy, strong child, and so forth. How easily we slide into all that, and it becomes a habit. We take it for granted. But, well, we are with it, as we say. What are we with? The devil? But the devil has 3,500 million children. So you see, it's very difficult to escape the company of the devil's brood. Now it requires a very strong person not to succumb to being with it, but to see for himself. Most people prefer to remain blind, deaf, dumb, stupid, clods. You and I, who are seriously concerned with living the holy life, have to be utterly alone. Not alone with the loneliness of the isolated self, which is just self-concerned, petty, and on the way to mere death. We have to be utterly alone in this, that we have to be so awake and so attentive that despite the fog, despite the evil that is around us, we do see light, we do see truth, and live up to it. There is no other way. Our return to our eternal home, from which we have strayed so easily, and which lies within us, is through the one and only path, the path of virtue. and understand virtue very, very clearly. Not virtue as we understand it in the ordinary worldly ambivalent sense of that virtue which is the contrary of vice. It's not that. The virtue that is virtue in the religious context is an absolute virtue. It has no opposite to it, which is vice. It is the strength of the purified soul. And the purified soul or the purified mind is the empty mind. It is empty of all beliefs, ideas, convictions, that on the intellectual side. It is empty of all greeds, violence, ambitions, passions, jealousies, and so forth, on the emotional side. It is empty of all that. It is pure. It is transparent. When that is the case, our psyche, which in the ordinary way is the mortal daughter of a mortal king, is transformed into the immortal bride of Eros, the creative power which is pure and untrammeled, which is transcendent, which is free of all bondage. This is the difference. And when that happens, that particular individual's psyche has become empty of all worldliness, of all evil, and is the receptive center, the focal point into which transcendent mind freely pours its energies, and they go out a blessing to the world around. But the world will never see it or know it until a very, very long time after the Holy One has passed away. The few might, and they do. This is a historical fact, that the very few do. But we haven't... to be concerned with what the world thinks and does, and whether it sees and understands now, whilst the Holy One is present, or too late. That is not our concern. Our concern is with the immediate now. And our duty, our dharma, I meant duty in the sense of not an obligation, a mere obligation, but our dharma is to live thus. So we have to be alone, because the world will not be with us. And we, if we mean to live the holy life and the religious life, cannot be with the world. And yet, although we are utterly alone on our own feet, it is we who become completely and totally interrelated with the world in which we live, although we are wholly not of it. This is our contribution to society, to mankind, which no mere politician, economist, educationist, sociologist, or anything you like can ever make. All these others merely keep on stirring the witch's cauldron. That is all there is to it. They are caught up in the network of ill, of evil. Their psyche is not purified. Whatsoever they do is tainted with their inner taints, inward taints. Therefore, as I said, they merely keep stirring the witch's cauldron. But the religious life, in this sense, which is the most austere sort of life that a man can lead, which is the real meaning of the Buddha's middle way, it's the religious life which can transform the human world. Hence the importance, the supreme importance of understanding the meaning of purity, of righteousness, and so forth. And that is something which only we as individuals can do. No one can understand, no one can attend, no one can keep going with diligence on our behalf. We have to do it ourselves. And remember, there is only one step to take, and that one step includes all the other steps, which are merely variations on the one step. If the one step has been taken by the individual who has somehow lit up with the passion for the truth, the reality, then that light, that energy, is a transcendent energy which is illimitable. As Sri Krishna said, I am the inexhaustible. This is wealth, real wealth. This is real power. See how scholars have failed to see the meaning of those verses which occur time and again through the various hymns of the Rig Veda, when those holy ones who sang the songs of eternal life prayed to the gods, give us wealth. Wealth in cattle, wealth in horses. This is the English translation. But the word for cattle is the same as the word for light, for understanding. Do you think that perfected holy ones were anxious to grab a large herd of bulls and cows and goats and pigs and whatnot? What would they do with them? In any case, they were vegetarians. The scholar can become so clever that he makes a rightabout turn and misses the real meaning altogether. Horses stand, ashva, they stand for the faculties, the powers of the intellect, of the mind. The power to penetrate and understand the real nature of that which is seen, heard, tasted, touched in the immediate now. So you see, when you stand alone and see for yourself and be free of selfness, you are wealthy with the wealth of transcendent vision and extraordinary insight, penetration. Your intellect is absolutely clear, no longer enthralled to the senses and to desire. Otherwise, the intellect is always the slave of desire. That is another meaning of the pure state, of purity, of righteousness. See how far all this is away from the common or garden conception of living the pure life, the good life, and so forth. Purity and goodness being understood as the opposite of impurity and badness. If we stick to the ambivalent sphere, the intellect will set up before itself an ought to be. Goodness means this, that, and the other. It's a mental fixation, and we shall live by it. That means we compel ourselves to live by it in conflict with another side of our nature, which wants to run riot. So one is in the state of everlasting conflict. That conflict is never resolved by ordinary psychological methods or perceptions or anything at all. The only true resolution is perfection. Look at all the wonderful stuff that the great creative artists of the world have produced. There is no compromise between the beautiful and the not so beautiful. There is no compromise there. It is absolute beauty. It's absolute goodness. And this is human fulfillment. In great poetry, great music, all that is great in art, and which is free of deterioration through time, in all of that there is this marvelous quality of transcendence, undefined, undefinable. But you know it when you come across it. You know it and you say, ah, this is it. And that's all you need to say. You don't try to say anything about it. You don't want to. And it's the same with the pure life as far as we humans are concerned. For us who are in the state of ambivalence and experiencing the conflict of virtue and vice, of goodness and badness, the question arises, well, what do we do? Keep going with diligence, as the Buddha said. Appamadena sampadeta. And what is the meaning of keep going with diligence? Remain awake, don't fall asleep. Attend wholly and completely to all that is flowing into me from the outside world and all that emerges within me, within my own self. Pay such complete attention to it that there is nothing left which is unworked out in terms of understanding. Of course, this is a heroic task. That is why in India they always called him who had realized transcendence the supreme hero. He was the Jinnah, the victor. He was the great hero, Mahavira, Vira. Vira is another word. The great hero. All others who are called heroes in the worldly sense, oh yes, yes, he did this, that or the other, is not very important. Most of it was unrecorded. But if anyone realized holiness, that was recorded, that belongs to the realm of the immortal, that belongs to the realm of human fulfillment. Therefore, for us too, when all the forces of evil, which are so rife, rampant in the world today, impinge upon our own psyche, it is our business to keep going with diligence, to remain wide awake and to watch, be so alert that no reaction of anger, ill will, hate goes out against it. No desire to possess for oneself. No desire to bring any sort of hurt to any human being or to an animal or to a plant. Harmlessness, supreme harmlessness. Because that is the supreme way in which, in this world, love finds its expression, that one is harmless. The harmless state is the harmonious state. It's a curious thing. When one enters the deep samadhi, the deep contemplative states, when one is in what the theistic religions and mystics would call in deep prayer, in union with God, one is in the utterly harmless state. This false distinction between self and not self has completely vanished. There is nothing within the individual to be hurt, and there is nothing which the individual thinks or feels or speaks or does which causes hurt. And this is the state of love. And this is the natural state for all human beings. There is no question of falling in love. The being in love perpetually is the natural state. The unnatural state is the being out of love. To be in love means no possessiveness, no demand, no bondage, no attachment, no license whatsoever of any sort. This is the pure state, isn't it? You see, there are such immense meanings to the word purity and to the word righteousness and so forth. And it is for us to keep going with diligence right to the end of our lives and allowing this purity completely to suffuse our own being and purify the world atmosphere with it.